In the last segment, we discussed souls in purgatory and how human spirit hauntings are basically their attempts to signal us that they need prayer. And as we were closing last time, we explored how some cases are complicated and it's not completely clear what's going on in the case. And sometimes through interacting with the case, maybe in an inappropriate way, we can invite these problems into our own lives. In this segment, we're going to talk about demonic infestation. And remember, that is when the demons have gained the legal spiritual rights to manifest in an extraordinary way in a place, generally through the consent of the person who has authority over that place. Now, I'd like to explore one case in depth because that case has gone on to be written up as a book by the homeowner and a professional author that assisted them and is likely to be made into a movie at some point in the future. And sometimes people are interested to hear, a perspective on what really went on in a case versus what ends up being made in Hollywood, which is often an exaggeration, of course. So this case is also important to me because it really represented the first formal church case that I worked on. So this was quite a few years ago. This was a house case, and I can use their names because they've written it up in the book and gone on to speak publicly about it. So the family name is Cranmer, and Bob Cranmer was a politician in our city of Pittsburgh for many years. He was also in the military, and he's a very solid, grounded person. Now, basically the story with that case, to give you the backstory before I got involved, Bob was drawn to the house his whole life. Since he was a little child, he used to stare at it and come up to the house. He always felt some connection with it. Well, it turned out that as Bob's life went on and he eventually had the means as an adult, he bought the house when it became available. Now, there was some hints, he says, that there was something wrong because when he bought it after it was purchased and he moved into the neighborhood, a number of the neighbors mentioned to him, "Oh, you bought that house," and everybody knew that it was supposedly haunted. He didn't really have anything going on for a while, in fact, a number of years. And it started small, and a lot of demonic infestations do start small. They start with some minor manifestation that you could dismiss or explain away. In this case, it was the pull chain of a light in the closet underneath the staircase. So this is an old 1800s kind of middle-of-the-road mansion in Pittsburgh. So this was probably somebody who was higher up in the steel mills. And it's a large house with a staircase that rotates around. So within that large wooden staircase that kind of came around, there was an empty space that there was a closet and then dead space there that was completely enclosed. And it started in this closet. It started in the morning. He would go to get his coat, and the pull chain for the light would be tightly wrapped around or tied around the light fixture. And he thought nothing of it and thought kids were playing or just it flopped that way or whatnot. Over time, things got more and more dramatic. Then he started taking string and tied the chain down so it couldn't move, just to rule out that somebody was moving it. And they come and find the string broken and tied. And eventually, he thought it was a little odd and some other small things were happening in the house. And so he took a rosary and he wrapped a rosary around the fixture there. Almost immediately when he checked it and came home the next day, the crucifix of the rosary looked like somebody had put it in their mouth and bit down on it and chewed on it hard enough to deform the metal. So it was kind of bent and deformed as if something had chewed on it. Then he tried that a few times. I think the rosary would be broken in some cases. Then the manifestation started spreading through the house. They started getting worse. The very typical things in demonic infestations were happening in this case, and the hallmarks are horrific odors with no source. That's the most common hallmark of a disembodied demon. A demon that's manifesting in an extraordinary way. It's not possessing a person, but it's kind of floating around. So you had the really bad odors, and these are packets of air that move. It's not like if you were to take a cigarette or incense and move it past somebody, there would be a lingering smell behind. This is as if a packet of air that has its own odor moves and it leaves no lingering behind it. So you can follow these through smell, but where they're not, there's absolutely no odor. Now, these odors vary quite a bit from case to case, but everybody describes them kind of in a similar way, that it's very horrible, usually involves kind of a scent of death or rotting, and mixed with other smells. So it's never just one smell. There can be a sulfurous smell, a rotting smell, human waste, these type of things. The most vile combination of the worst things you've ever smelled in your life, put them together and that's this. So these packets of air were appearing, the typical scratches, the three scratches in lines, thin lines, were appearing on Bob. He would wake up with them. This was one of the rare cases where blood started appearing in the house. So at the point where they started having the house blessed, because things were getting bad enough that they were reaching out for various spiritual remedies, because the kids were being bothered and all this, and it's a very long story, but it was affecting the whole family. After the house blessings, and in part of the Catholic house blessing that's thorough, you go through with holy water and you spatter all the walls with holy water and some of the floors as part of the blessing. Well, the next day after each time, there was what looked like spatters of blood in the places where the holy water had gone. Bob actually took samples of this with Q-tips, and he had a connection to an architectural firm that did analysis for samples from houses that have various issues to figure out what it is, you know, molds or chemical spills, this type of thing. He actually sent that in for analysis. My recollection is that it came back organic, but of an unknown, basically, origin. They couldn't figure out what it was, but they knew it was organic. This was appearing on the walls. This increased and started appearing in the light fixtures and running down the light fixtures. They would find it dried on there in the mornings. And then something interesting happened. One morning they came out and there was a pool of fluid on the floor, fairly large. And his wife, and they had had a number of kids, knew what this odor is. And the odor is very distinct, and that is amniotic fluid, the fluid from the womb. And there was a pool of this on the floor. And it looked just like amniotic fluid, and it smelled just like it. And that was the first clue. And things escalated and escalated. There was a number of experiences that were quite negative that the kids went through. Objects started being thrown in the house hard enough to shatter and break. And then the spiritual intervention started increasing. And that was leading towards, over the years, leading towards when I was called into the case. So by the time I was called by the church, they had been working on this for, I believe, at least 7 years, if not more. Many, many masses were said in the house. Many times a week for years. A lot of work was done, a lot of blessings. Not much was really helping. And it came to a point where the church wanted a fresh take on the case. The diocese wanted a fresh take on the case. And I had some connection with this work through a group that I was a staff advisor for at Penn State. And that was more of a group that was just interested in whether this paranormal stuff was normal. It was essentially a paranormal investigation group, but this was way back in the early days before it had become popular. And I was curious in grad school whether any of these complaints were real or just artifacts of the brain. So I had become an advisor to this group so I could clinically interview the people with these complaints. So in that context, I was called in to do psyche evals essentially on the family because I was trained as a clinician as part of graduate school. So I came in really to more interview Bob and his family. But through that, I personally had direct experiences. It was very surprising. I had seen somebody go into a possession state, oddly enough, only a few weeks before going on this case for the first time. And that was the first time that I was really exposed to the demonic in a direct way. But this case was the first time that I saw manifestations myself. So what I experienced when I came through the house for the first time and spent a weekend there with Bob and interviewed everybody, I saw black shadows sliding along the floors and walls, which were like maybe a blob about that big with no source. There was no object creating the shadow. It would move and slide and then slide up walls on its own, apparently of its own volition. I experienced the column of very bad odor of air that would move, and it would move about as fast as a person walking, and you could track it by its odor, very distinct. Early on in that first weekend, and everybody in the house experienced this, spontaneously the entire house filled with the smell of roses, of flowers. Nothing in particular prompted it. We were discussing the case and what was going on, and suddenly like that, the entire house, you could smell flowers everywhere, as if you had had dozens of flowers in every room. We ran through the house looking for a source of it, looking for an explanation. This was winter time. It was January, I believe, so all the windows and doors were closed. It's not like something wafted in. In the course of running through the house trying to figure this out, because I had never experienced it before, suddenly, as quickly as it came, about 2 minutes later, it was gone, and you couldn't find a trace of it anywhere. There was a number of things that I experienced in that house and had direct experience, which for me was important because more as a brain researcher, which is what I was involved in at the time, and as a clinician, I was looking for natural explanations of things. And I wanted to be sure that this wasn't just artificial experiences. Now it's important to note here that what I was experiencing, everybody else was too. So it's one thing if somebody sees a shadow, but they're the only one that sees it. You could rule that out and say, you know, that was a hallucination, or you're tricking yourself, or any kind of explanation like that. But everybody was having the same experiences with the bad odors, with the positive odors of roses, seeing the shadows. One interesting thing that was a little dramatic to share about that case, and this could have been coincidence, but we took a break from the case at one point and took a walk. I just wanted to clear my head and get away from the house because it was feeling pretty oppressive. We got a couple blocks away, and it was very cold in winter, and there was a lightning strike, and all of the power seemed to go out in that part of the city of Pittsburgh except the block that we were standing on. So there was a thunderous crash, and suddenly everything was dark as far as we could see except the little pocket of light that we were standing in, which could have been nothing, but when you're involved in these cases, things like that happen, and you wonder. So some things are obviously some type of preternatural manifestation. Some things just make you wonder. So the clue, to get back to the amniotic fluid, as the research was done on the house and the history of the house, it doesn't seem conclusive, but it may be that there was a doctor, an OBGYN, who had an office a few blocks down the street. Bob uncovered through a professional historian that he hired some evidence, not conclusive, that he may have been doing off-the-books abortions for more affluent clientele in this house and renting part of the house, that him and a nurse were doing this work. Now, that may or may not have happened. If it had happened, maybe that had contributed to things. But possibly more interesting, remember the staircase, the curved wooden staircase I mentioned at the beginning. Well, there was a strong discernment or a spiritual sense that something important was under that staircase in the dead space where it was sealed. There was no door or way to get to it, and the way the staircase was built, it created a hollow underneath it just by the way the building was constructed. So I convinced Bob at one point that I thought something was under there. I just felt strongly about it. Other people had felt strongly about that too. So he got a circular saw and tore the wall down in the back of the closet. Now inside was a lot of leftover coal dust, I guess, from over the decades back in the day when they used to use a coal-fired furnace in the house. There's a few toys that his kids had lost when they were little, that, like Legos and other things, that were big enough that there was no way to get into that space because that space was completely sealed. You might have gotten a playing card slipped through slats in the wood where the wood joined in the flooring, perhaps, where the house had expanded and contracted, but we couldn't find any large space for the larger little toys that we found. But most interestingly, we found a piece of paper folded up, very old, covered in soot in the corner. Bob still has to this day. And we opened it carefully because it was very brittle. And on the one side was a drawing, apparently maybe of the street. It was a very rough drawing of the house and a sunset. And on the other side was a fairly disturbing drawing of kind of what looked like half human, half animal people looking at each other, and the family name written on there. And the family name was Malak, M-A-L-A-C-K. Now, those of you that know the Old Testament may recognize that as sounding pretty close to an Old Testament figure named Moloch, which was a deity or god, quote unquote, that was worshipped by some of the tribes that the Jews came across. Moloch was associated with child sacrifice. So whether that meant anything or whether there was some connection, we don't know. Historically, we're pretty sure that a number of families went to ruin in that house. Four or five families had their fortunes destroyed and kind of left the house in tatters and ruin. There was a lot of death in that house, a lot of misfortune, a lot of sadness. So that case had been dragging on for years, and Bob talks about it openly now. And of course, a lot of people ask, why didn't you just leave? And he felt that God wanted him there and that it was his fight and he wasn't going to give up his home to this thing. Now, in the end, it did end. The then most senior exorcist in the United States, who's now passed on, came and led the exorcism prayers on the house, the minor exorcism. And in the end, the case did finally end, and the house has been peaceful for a number of years now. But that's an example of kind of a classic demonic infestation. Now let's discuss the treatment of demonic infestation. The treatment is really dependent on the cause or the way the case started. Now, if you move into a home or an apartment and there's a pre-existing problem there that you didn't do anything to cause, it may have been caused by the previous owner or somebody with authority over the building. What is often necessary is at least a thorough house blessing and prayer in that place and bringing sacramentals into that place, blessed crucifixes, blessed salt, blessed water, these types of things, sacramentals from the church. Sometimes that's enough. Sometimes it's also necessary to have a home exorcism or a house exorcism. This is sometimes called the minor exorcism. It's not the same as a solemn exorcism of a person. It's basically, in the old rite, the appendix of the solemn exorcism is a brief exorcism for places or objects. So in some cases, the priest will do that in addition to the blessing and bringing sacramentals and prayer into the home. Now, sometimes a demonic infestation is related to a particular object that's in the home. Now, there are cases where you might acquire an object or somebody may give you an object that has a spirit attached to it. Now, it's important to understand that items cannot be possessed, but items can have a spirit attached to them. Think about how we bless objects within the Catholic Church. We may bless a crucifix or have a statue blessed or have holy water blessed. What are we doing there? We're asking for some aspect of God's spirit to be connected with that, for it to be made holy. The opposite can also happen where within dark occult rituals or Satanism of various types, people will do a ritual and ask a demonic spirit to attach to an object. If that object is then brought into a home with the consent of the person with authority over that home, that spirit has a limited right or license to be active in that place. So these types of cases, we need to remove the object that came into the home that may have a bad spirit attached to it. Now, that object could just be exorcised in some cases. If the object has an obvious kind of occult or negative aspect to it, it might be good to remove it just because of the association psychologically that it might inspire in the person. So it kind of depends again on what you're dealing with. But if it's activity that came from the previous owner's activities, blessing, exorcism, bring in prayer and sacramentals, get your life in order. If there's an object in the home that either you acquired or somebody gave to you or somebody left in the home, you want to have that removed. There's no validity to these superstitions about burning things or burying them or putting them in a stream or any of these ideas. If it's a cursed object, if it has an evil spirit attached to it, it's good if the priest does a minor exorcism over it so that that spiritual connection is broken, and then just throw the object away. If it's overtly evil and kind of a nasty object, you could destroy it. That's fine, just so it doesn't, you know, inspire negative thoughts and feelings in other people. But generally, once it's exorcised, you don't have to worry about it. So this is just an overview of the treatment of demonic infestation. Again, these cases are complicated. They're not always straightforward. And really, it's best to have a priest that has had some training or experience in this area to help you. Don't take this work lightly, and don't take getting involved in this work lightly. You should have a spiritual director. You should be looking at your life and trying to improve your spiritual life and your behavior when you're involved in this, because when you push against hell directly, you're consenting to a certain amount of struggle back. Now, one final example, and in a sense warning about that along these lines. When I started this work, I was told very early on by a priest who's become probably my best friend, an exorcist, do you have a wife, do you have kids, do you have pets? And was told you basically cannot have a wife, children, or pets if you're going to be involved in this. I kind of understood why. I imagined it was because the demons may try to take revenge on somebody else that's close to you if that person is vulnerable and you're not. So we have a lot of grace and protection from God when we're involved in this work, if we're called into it by God as a ministry. Now, the priest has a lot of protection naturally on their own. The laity, there really should be evidence that you're genuinely called into this, so the protection comes with it. What happened was my father was very vulnerable spiritually in the sense that he was baptized, but his life, he hadn't got himself squared away spiritually at all. And he's recently passed on. And I'm confident from conversations with him that he would want to share this if it would be helpful with people. My father was staying at his house alone in Philadelphia. He was sleeping. He woke up standing at the top of his stairs, came to, standing there, not knowing how he got there. And the next moment, he was in the air. And he was thrown down his stairs so hard that he didn't touch the stairs. He landed at the bottom on the floor and broke his neck. He recovered, and tremendous good fruit came from that. He got his spiritual life in order. He confessed all of his sins. He then formed a close personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And then recently, a couple years after that, he passed on, and I was able to be with him when he died. And it was a good death, and a lot of good came from that. It was a wake-up call for him, but it was a very sobering moment for me. And in a sense, that's my third example of a demonic infestation. Demons in a place manifesting in a very powerful way. You might call that oppression because it was more personal, but I think it follows the example of my own home as a note of warning for the viewers. That with this work, if you're a priest, great. You do it because your bishop tells you to. But if you're a lay person, or if you're in a paranormal investigating group, or you're somebody that just wants to do this because you think it's interesting or cool, or it's going to make you feel special, please don't. This can be deadly serious. You need to be called into this by God, and there should be evidence of that through special efficacy, special protection, and the discernment of priests and ideally your bishop. It's a very rare thing. And now that 10 years have gone by and we've trained hundreds of priests in this country, there's probably no longer a need for people like me, where there was a gap where we didn't have many priests trained in this area. And so there was, God allowed me to be used to help learn some things and help train some priests. But now, God willing, we'll have plenty of priests trained in this area, and there won't be a need for that. So pray for us, pray for your priests in particular, But please do not mess around with this ministry lightly. It can be very serious. That being said, God's in charge of everything. And praise God and praise Jesus Christ. And God bless you.